Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Craig Moore. What a piece. Beautifully struck home by Craig Moore, and the Australian supporters go wild in Stuttgart.
Why not? Touched by Kalach. Ericsson's corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Moore at the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes for Spetzengler. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
He's
Australia got it!
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again. Welcome along to another edition of Shim, Spider, and so much more. No need to pay $15 for a live stream of this podcast, although if you'd like to, we are open to it. Coming up, we've got Joey Gibbs joining us all the way from Iceland as our special guest, and we'll discuss the other topics of interest, all in the company of our two golden boys from the golden generation, Zeljko Kalats and Craig Moore. How are you, boys? Good to see you.
Good, Simon.
Good evening, mate. Boys.
Yes, good morning over here. Maury, let's start with you. Any news from you? What's going on with Canberra's A-League bid? It's all gone a bit quiet in the last few weeks. Have you got an exclusive for us?
It has, and unfortunately no scoops. But look, what I can tell you is that Canberra still very, very keen to progress and are in a position where they're able to. But they're in confidential discussions at the moment with the FFA, Simon. So a lot of those discussions still privately being had behind closed doors. But hopefully for Canberra, that they'll be in a position to be a new addition to the competition in the next year.
Okay. Spider, from your point of view, you're entering, I think, level 3 lockdown in Zante. You've had a big spike in the coronavirus, and yet you're supposed to be kicking off the season next week. You've got a friendly today, haven't you?
Yeah, we just played our friendly today, and we played fantastic, to be fair. The first 55, 60 minutes, the boys were really, really good. We ended up winning 2-0, which was supposed to be our last friendly match. Good way heading into the season, where we're supposed to kick off next week. As far as we know, at the moment, we're still playing, but we wait to hear some more news in coming days. We're wearing masks all over the streets now. So that's obligatory. We have to do that. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. We'll keep preparing like we start this week, but that'll come down to the government.
It's a tough situation all around the world at the moment. All right, thanks for the moment, boys. We're going to kick things off with Simon Says.
Simon Says.
Now, my topic this week surrounds a fantastic story. It is the sort of story sports journalists dream of. Overnight, a 26-year-old woman from Brisbane, half a world away, became one of a very few select Australians to play in an FA Cup final at Wembley Stadium. Not many from this part of the world have done that. Joe Marston, Craig Johnston, Tim Cahill, and Mila Jedernak, standing alone in a very short list until yesterday. Harry Kewell did play in the Cup final for Liverpool, of course, but that was at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff. So the feats of Hayley Razzo in reaching the big stage are rare enough. The only other Aussie female to play in a cup final was Taryn Rockall in 1999, who won a winner's medal for Arsenal against Sunderland at the Valley, home of Charlton Athletic. The fact that Haley has done it just 2 years since breaking her back in an on-field collision while playing for the Portland Thorns makes it utterly remarkable. There were doubts that Razza would actually walk again, let alone play football, so that she returned just 6 months later is testament to her powers of recovery physically and her mental determination. And even in recent weeks, Razza has had to overcome hardship. Last Monday, Razzo's family home on the Gold Coast was burgled, with the thieves getting away with a stash of Matilda's memorabilia, the family jewellery, and a laptop. In the build-up to the cup final, the theft got a fair bit of traction in the mainstream media, rightly so, but as per usual, the main bit, the reason why Haley is any sort of a public profile at all, to wit her achievements in football, has been largely ignored outside of football-specific circles. Even the newspaper in Razzo's home state of Queensland led this weekend with the usual diet of origin build-up and Bledisloe Cup reaction. There is, however, a section on the Tokyo Olympics, if you're keen, a story on archery. There are tales on swimming, athletics, water polo, boxing, basketball, and hockey. And football, the world's most popular sport, and the Matildas, a team with a real chance of a medal in Japan next year, absent. This sadly is part of the ongoing story or non-story of the game in this country. Now, some will say this underlines the lack of coverage of female sport. True, to an extent. Yet if Hayley Razzo played AFLW, for example, I wonder if we'd be hearing a lot more about her. After all, Taylor Harris had a statue constructed after suffering online abuse. Sam Kerr's links with AFL are covered ad nauseum. In 2020, footballers from this country are not only leading the way for their sport, but for female sport in this country. Razzo is one of 11 Australian women playing in the FA Women's Super League in England, fast becoming one of the best women's leagues on the planet. There are two Aussie coaches in Joe Montemuro and Tanya Oxterby. Yet aside of Sam Kerr, a lot of the team you reckon could walk down most Australian streets and largely be unrecognised. And many will again claim this to be a lack of recognition for women's sport, and again, in part, I agree. Yet look at the coverage Elise Perry receives, now she's full-time with cricket, or the attention that was lavished on Cathy Freeman 20 years ago, or the column niches devoted to Ash Barty, Sam Stosur, Stephanie Gilmore, Sally Fitzgibbons, when they're doing well. In a list of the 50 most influential women in sport compiled by the Sydney Morning Herald last year, Sam Kerr was the only Matilda to make the list. This is not just a female sport problem, it's a football problem. The FIFA Women's World Cup in 2023 offers us a long build-up and a chance to rectify that, but it's just a moment in time, just like the Asian Cup was in 2015, and we all know what happened after that. We have to change the conversation, not just for now, but for good. In the meantime, congratulations to Hayley, who sadly didn't win overnight, her Everton team going down 3-1 to Manchester City. But nonetheless, Hayley has gone down in history. Let's move on to Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, which has been live streaming since 2008, specialising in custom-built stream pages, pay-per-view and multi-language streaming. They can cater to large online conferences with multiple simultaneous streams and destinations, including all social media channels servicing clients Australia-wide. Go to streamgates.com.au or find them on Instagram. So, guys, let's kick off this week with an interview I actually did with FFA CEO James Johnson this week for Optus Sport. And it was a wide-ranging chat, but the main theme he kept returning to was this unbundling, as the FFA call it, of the A-League from the governing body. And he seems, James Johnson, to be rather frustrated by the glacial pace of progress. And the quote was, if we don't get it done by the start of the season, then basically we shouldn't bother. And he sort of hints the fact that the member federations are holding things up. And my question to you is, if that is the case, then clearly governance reform has not gone far enough if politics is still checking that progress. But how do we get that reform, Maury?
Yeah, no, it's a tough question, Simon. I've also seen another quote along the lines of the unbundling process should take months.
Not years. Now, yeah.
Not years. Now, you know, James has been in since January, I believe. So if he can't be the person that can drive this this reset, this reform, restructure that we know, and we're going blue in the face, aren't we, in terms of the amount of times and discussion that we have on it. Then if he can't, nobody can. Clearly there needs to be a restructure. And we're not saying, we've never said that the member federations need to completely be gone. What we need to do is make sure that they are structured in a financially better way that has a bigger influence on the national footprint. And therefore that, you know, dollars can be saved that can be reinvested and distributed in different areas rather than the amount and the layers of administration and steering committees, which, you know, it takes too much time for the major decisions, important decisions to be made, Simon. So, like I said, it's a big job, but I think with the FFA, that they've got to be, the FFA, sorry, they're the ones that are going to be strong and drive this through. And if people, state member federations, aren't going to jump on board, then we may need to alienate these people to show that that's not the future of the game.
Spider, I wanted to ask you about a second part of the interview with Jones, that he talks about a national second division. He sort of went close to committing to one, didn't quite actually say, yes, we are going to do it. But he did say that 2022 is an area of time we can shoot for. Does that go far enough for you? I know you're a big supporter of a national second division.
Yeah, look, well, I'm glad he really thinks so. And look, with the times, it's 2020. We all know what kind of disaster this year's been. So if you look at 2021 as setting a footprint for it to start in 2022, realistically, it's only a year away. I mean, we're now November, so we're 2 months and we're finished with this dreaded 2020. And it'll give 1 year to actually fully prepare for the second division and 2022 to get it underway. You know, I was really interested, Simon, like you would have sat there and watched his facial expressions when you were having this interview with him. What did you get out of it? Did you actually, was he positive with anything? Did he see he was getting somewhere, or was it a face of frustration?
It's a bit difficult with James, because he does tend to be, you know, keep things quite close to his chest in terms of his body language. But I did get the sense, and this is why I led with the line that, you know, he was frustrated by the pace of progress with the unbundling, because that was a theme he kept returning to time and again, even unprompted throughout the conversation. So, you know, that was obviously one of the major points that he wanted to get across, that he was irritated by the fact that he couldn't get this over the line because of the politics of the game. I actually think it's a good thing that has been, you know, brought out into the open. The other stuff, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you know, the second division, it's been a difficult year, and maybe 2022, given that, is the best year for it now. But you know, he did say that we want to have it; it's in our interest to have it. But again, it comes down to the modelling and you know, what it's actually going to look like. Anyway, we hope that they can make progress and actually get that separation finalised by the start of the new A-League season, and then perhaps we can see that sort of investment that we need to tackle some of the issues that we have in football. I want to move on, guys, and talk a bit about the Newcastle Jets. And first of all, the Joey Champness situation. The Jets, we sort of touched upon this last week, but the Jets have agreed to loan him to Brisbane, Maury, given his family are there. Is that the right solution, given COVID at the moment? Obviously, the Newcastle Jets fans are not particularly happy. Laurie McInnes says Raw did everything correctly by the book. What's your take on it?
I just think it's a bizarre situation. I really do. I mean, he's returned back home to his family. Look, I get all that. I understand that. He's a Newcastle Jets player who has great talent. Newcastle were fantastic with him to allow him to pursue a music career and what have you. So you would have just thought that then coming back, that, you know, he plays his football at the Jets. The concern I would say that the Jets have probably got is because he's missed the amount of time that he has, and maybe they don't feel is potentially he can be up to the speed. And financially, maybe it makes sense for him. But I just found it really, really bizarre, Simon, I did.
But I wonder whether there is the issue is the fact that because he'd been overseas, and when he flew back into Australia, of course, he went back to his family home in Queensland, and given now the restrictions in terms of movement due to COVID, whether that's, you know, played the biggest part in all of this. But I agree with you, it is on the surface a very odd situation. And Spider, in terms of the Jets' coaching situation, that's still on hold. I mean, the whole club is, you know, clearly on hold at the moment until new owners come in. Among the names being put forward for the coaching vacancy, John Aloisi. Johnny's linked with every single Hayden Fox, Luke Wilkshire, Peter Sakinis, Damian Murray, Arthur Pappas. What's the right solution for Newcastle? Is there one?
Well, it's a pretty good list, ain't it? And when you look at it, and again, I know I'm biased, because I think out of all those people, the best credentials would probably be John Aloisi, Hayden Fox. I think this is a perfect opportunity for him to get an opportunity to lead a club. And Arthur Pappas, who I heard is interested. So, I mean, they're three pretty good managers for a club like Newcastle. In saying that, I would like to see Foxy get the opportunity to run his own ship. We spoke about apprenticeships. We spoke about how long he's been an assistant coach under Popper at Wanderers, very successful. At Perth, very successful. This would be the ideal club for someone like Foxy to come in.
Okay. On the pitch, Maury, a couple of Ollie Roos returning home in a couple of strikers as well. Daniel Bowman coming back to play for the Mariners and Ben Falame to Melbourne Victory. And this is important, isn't it, for our young strikers to get game time, particularly in the A-League, particularly ahead of the Olympics in Tokyo next year.
Yeah, and another player, Joshua Laws, who's come back from Germany and signed with Wellington Phoenix. So, look, it's good to see these players coming back, Simon. It's important that they do kind of get those minutes, hopefully leading into to the Olympics, because we know how beneficial that will be to Graham Arnold and the team that that he will eventually take. As many as we possibly can with our Olympic players playing minutes this season is really, really important. So, look, it's good to see again a couple of new players coming back to the league. It's again steering clear of that recycled club to club kind of scenario, Simon. So, I'm really positive about it, and I wish all the players that have come back the very best of luck, and hopefully they have a really big year, which would be fantastic preparation for the Olympics.
Maury, we'll stick with you for this one as well, because obviously your links with Brisbane Roar and with Queensland. The Roar sent out a message to all their members this week regarding where they're going to play in season 2021. And they're looking to play all their matches at Dolphin Stadium to move out of Suncorp completely. Is that a good move, given we know that they pay quite an extortionate rent at Suncorp? In fact, it's too big for them. And the fact there's a better atmosphere at Dolphin. But a lot of fans are going to be inconvenienced by this move as well, aren't they?
Well, they are, because, I mean, and you look at now, obviously, Brisbane Roar have located for training down the Gold Coast. But they're going to be playing the games at Redcliffe, which is Dolphin. But look, for me, I think it's the right decision, Simon. I know it's probably going to be tough on some supporters in terms of travel, but it is a fantastic stadium for football. It has provided already some really good atmospheres and some great matches. And financially, it's an absolute no-brainer for Brisbane Roar. I think it's great. We know how good a stadium Suncorp is for the big games. So for me, no problem. But I do feel a little bit for a certain amount of fans that probably in terms of travel and all that sort of stuff, it can be a bit of a hassle.
But it sets the precedent, doesn't it, for that move to hopefully a boutique stadium long term in Queensland for Brisbane Roar. Spider, a topic we've covered a fair bit on the pod continues to rumble on. Players and coaches from the three A-League teams this week that are involved in the Asian Champions League expressing serious concerns about the health and safety risks of competing in Qatar, and not to mention the financial, logistical and mental health implications of another round of quarantine as and when they return to Australia. But the issue for the A-League clubs and for the FFA, if they withdraw they will get fined or suspended, I have no doubt, or probably both, by AFC if they don't go. So they're between a rock and a hard place, aren't they? What do they
do? Yeah, you really feel for them, don't you? Especially with, like, the lead up to pre-season now, when we're talking about the season starting on the 26th of December, the managers and their staff would really have all sorts going through their minds. Look, we don't want to get suspended, do we? I mean, we love the ACL. We want to be in the ACL because we want to grow as a part of Asia. How do we make it happen is going to be the hardest thing. I'm well and truly not up to knowing how the clubs are going to do this. How they're going to handle it financially is another big problem, because we're already talking about the amount of money that we constantly keep losing. Sydney FC, I would say, will somehow find a way. The others, I don't know. Look, it's a difficult one, Simon. None of us can comment because we don't know the ins and outs of the clubs.
It's a COVID world, isn't it? This is how we have to live, sadly, at the moment. One more before we move overseas. And staying in Asia, Pete Klimovsky has been removed or stood down from his coaching role at Shimizu.
Or resigned.
That's disappointing, isn't it? Obviously, his first senior gig, got it on the back of success with Ange Postecoglou last season with Yokohama, but for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. But I guess that first coaching gig can be very, very tough, particularly in the J-League.
Yeah, I think in general, and Spider and Popper will go through this again in Greece, Simon, the initial part of going into any club is to be able to survive. And if you can get through that period and you're able to survive, then you can really start to put a stamp on the football club, and then you can start to be successful. But it's very, very tough. You know, I read the reports coming out with Pete, and my heart goes out to him. You know, he tried to do things in a way that he believed was the way that he wanted to play, similar to Ange. He wanted to play entertaining football. He wanted to have a team that could score goals. And that was a team that he was seeing. But unfortunately, as he mentioned, that they were probably that little bit short, you know, in terms of, you know, the results didn't go against them. And maybe that quality in terms of defensively to be able to turn some of those results into winning games and points is what's cost him in the end. Or it might have not. He might have resigned and just seen the writing on the wall. But either way, mate, it's about surviving at the beginning.
Mm. And it's funny, Maury, because it's actually non-relegation this year in the J-League. So it just shows to you, all over the world, it's a results-driven industry. He played good football, but he probably didn't have the players that Ange had, or the quality that Ange had. And what Maury said at the beginning was spot on. You have to survive before you can build. You got to sort of build from the back and then slowly get better. He went all gung-ho, which his games were very attractive to watch. But if you don't win 10 games in a row or 11 games in a row, there's only one end product, and that's you losing a job.
That's football, isn't it? Just before we close this section, Spider, any clues as to the future of Max Burgess? Reports last week that he still hadn't reported back for pre-season training with Western United.
Yeah, it was a funny one, ain't it? Because I know Max is a Sydney boy. So whether he's just got a bit stubborn and said, well, I'm not going back to Melbourne in these circumstances. I understand that I'm contracted. I don't know. This is probably a good one for us to probably get in contact with him and to understand the situation, because he had a fantastic season. I don't think the club and Max had any loggerheads or any fallouts. I think it's just a personal decision that he doesn't want to go back into that lockdown situation in Victoria.
Okay. Thanks for the moment, guys. We're going to move overseas. London Calling.
London Calling.
Some sad news to start off with from the UK, Maury. The death of Nobby Stiles, World Cup winner with England, 1966. He also coached the likes of David Beckham and the two Nevilles, Phil and Gary, when he was coaching with United in the late 80s. But in terms of his playing career, not just winning a World Cup, but you could almost call him the early pioneer of that holding midfield role. Before he was Vinnie Grella, before long before Vinnie Grella was even thought of.
For anyone who didn't know, that's the type of player he was. Brilliant. Yeah, I like that.
Nah, but yeah, there's been a lot of a lot of support. Obviously, I mean, unfortunately, you lose a fantastic person like that. So the papers have been flooded with great stories, and you know he'll be hugely missed. But his contribution to football, Simon, was an enormous one, and I'm sure that there'll be people. You know, you look at the likes of the Beckhams and the Nevilles, and people that have been mentored by the Nobby Styles. That hopefully now, they can have the same contribution moving forward to really honour his life and what he contributed to football.
Talking of legends, Spider, Pele turned 80 last week, and this week Diego Maradona turned 60. It's amazing, isn't it, how quickly life goes. Where do you stand on who was better?
Yeah. Mate, you have to throw that question to me, right? I'm going to sit on the fence here.
Because you can't.
Come on, man. How can you compare the two greats? Two different eras. Like, I mean, Pele was a freak in his own world. Who did someone say that he was the only person, only footballer that could make a war stop or something like that? And then, you know, I've been watching all these clips of Maradona, you know, when he had his birthday and the way he used to train. And they're just two greats. I don't know. Look, I know Maradona more because it's more my vintage. Yeah. So I'll say Maradona.
There we go. We got him down off the fence eventually, Maury. Let's talk about some of the on-field action. In fact, before we do that, what about Pep Guardiola leading the call for 5 subs to be reintroduced in the Premier League? He's done this on the back of a lot of soft tissue injuries this season, perhaps down to the short pre-season. Is this all a bit self-interested? Because, of course, he's got the depth of squad that other teams don't. Or does he have a point?
I think with this one, Simon, he says something like and he says muscle injuries are up 47%. So look, I actually think that he was talking about the best interest of the game and not Manchester City. I think that he feels that in terms of again the year that we've all had, the amount of games that these players are expected to play. That the 5 sub rule is something that can help try and protect these players and keep players fit and healthy. So I don't believe it was a Man City thing from Pep Guardiola in this situation.
And he's got support, obviously, from Jurgen Klopp and Frank Lampard, strangely enough, two other members of the Big Six of English football. Spider, Champions League and Europa League this week, some terrific games. Real Madrid, bottom of their group, and they only got out of jail very late on against Borussia Mönchengladbach, thanks to two late goals, and Barca winning 2-0 at Juventus.
You know, it's funny because on the back of what we're just talking about there with Guardiola wanting the subs, this is actually one of the reasons, and we've spoken on the pod over the amount of weeks that we're going to get all sorts of results because of this. I agree with Guardiola. I think it's impossible what they're doing. I mean, even watch Liverpool. They played Midtjylland. Liverpool were poorer, but poor. And Klopp rested a lot of players because he thought it was going to be a game that he could win without his stars. But at the end, he had to bring them on as well. It's just the amount of games, the amount of crazy results. I mean, Real Madrid 2-0 down. And Maury would know, Mönchengladbach's a very difficult place to go and get result. And to come back late and get a result. They're last in their group in the Champions League. Their season is all over the place because of the amount of travel, the amount of games. The other cracking game was that I seen was Shakhtar Inter. They played a 0-0. That was a cracking match. That two top... What's that, Maury?
No, I'm saying, yeah, like 0-0. So, obviously, that was a game that I didn't catch, Spider, but, I mean, I'm assuming it was an entertaining 0-0.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, it finished 0-0 and there was chances for fun. It was like open game. And then Inter come back to the Serie A this week and they jag a 90th-minute equaliser to go 2-2. And the other one was Atletico Madrid. Everyone thought they just belt Salzburg and Salzburg gave them a game and a half. And to be fair, Atletico scored two cracking goals. But what I was impressed in the Champions League was Rashford's hat-trick. Mate, the way he scored, what Man United did in that match, you go, wow, they're back. They played brilliant counter-attacking football, speed, players willing to work, like 5-0. And then you watch them today against Arsenal, and seriously, you could get two pins and poke your eyes. That's how bad the game was.
But also with that squad, the Man United game, apparently, again, lack of leadership, body language was poor, looked really disjointed. So how can they go from a 5-0 and Rashford being brilliant to, I mean, and again, it was Roy Keane. Roy Keane was very critical again to Manchester United. He didn't miss again. It'll be all over social media. But saying lack of leadership, players not good enough. He says, and if Man United are turning a corner, he says, bloody hell, it's a long corner.
Don't you just love it? He's gold, mate. I'm telling you. Like, I mean, he loves that club so much. And it would be so painful for these ex-greats of Man United who have won so many things that know what the club's all about. And they see the club in a roller coaster ride at the moment. They see 1 week fantastic and the next two or three games rubbish. And it's a real difficult pill to swallow. But, mate, I feel sorry for these players. I do. I know they get paid a lot of money to perform, but they are human beings and they can't perform to their best week in, week out with this schedule.
Well, Manchester United have not performed at home all season. They haven't now won any of their opening four home matches at Old Trafford. It's the first time that that has happened since season 1972-73. Liverpool...
No one's scared to go there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was the point that you picked up on a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the lack of crowds. Liverpool, perhaps not quite as an intimidating place to go to at the moment because of that as well. But they got a narrow win over West Ham by 2-1. They're struggling defensively, though, aren't they? With the injuries, Van Dijk out, and then Fabinho, his replacement, out with injury as well. So Nathaniel Phillips, who was seemingly on his way out of the club during the off-season, was brought in against West Ham, and he did well as well.
Huge praise, Simon. Huge praise he got for this game. Boy come in and done extremely well. Jota also got another goal, so he's come in and hit the ground running for Liverpool. Yeah, so, yeah, but like it says, the reports and Klopp come out in terms of Phillips, he says, he's shown me something that I didn't expect. It was like, kind of knew what we had, but he delivered far more. So they were excited by his performance, which will be good for Liverpool, who, you know, you're talking about Fabinho and the likes having a sort of like play that potentially dual role. At least that's another positive for Liverpool.
Yeah. Manchester City got a win at Sheffield United. Kyle Walker scoring, of course he did, against his boyhood club. And afterwards, Spider, Pep Guardiola playing down speculation that he will return to Barcelona. Now, this comes on the back, of course, of Bartomeu, the hugely unpopular president, has finally stood down. What does that mean, do you think, for the future of Leo Messi? Does that make it easier for him to stay, or does it actually, conversely, open up the door for him to leave?
Yeah, difficult one. I've got to say, I've got to see Messi leaving. I just, the more I think about it, the more dramas I see. I see Messi leaving probably at the end of this season. Where he's going to go, there's probably only one or two clubs that he can go to. But Barcelona just look a shadow of itself at the moment.
They're 12th, Spider, yeah? They're 12th in La Liga at the moment, which, I mean, again, we're 6 or 7 games in. I don't know... how often you can say you've seen Barcelona in that kind of position, Simon. So I think that's why the changes have happened. And I kind of agree with you, Spides. I think Leo Messi, I think at the end of this season, he'll be gone. And you know, Pep Guardiola, I don't think, you know, he said that he won't end up back at Barcelona. So Messi could end up a big chance at being at City.
Final question in this segment, Maury, goes to you. A word about the Scottish Premier League title race now with Celtic
on, the Scottish in, Premier League title.
With Celtic in Scottish Cup action from last season, bizarrely, over the weekend. It offered Rangers the chance to move 9 points clear, and they took it. They defeated Kilmarnock by 1-0. Is this the year that Rangers end a 10-year wait for a Scottish Premier League crown? It's early days. You're confident?
I bloody hope so. We can't have Celtic win a 10 in a row. Look, Rangers have started the season very, very well. They have had the odd hiccup, but I think it was against Livingston and possibly Hibs. But, mate, defend them well. They're clean sheets, 6-7 clean sheets. Their squad now is deeper than what I've seen for many, many years. When you look at the bench now, Simon, in terms of, you know, the players that can come on and still influence a game, it's a lot deeper a squad. So Rangers in a really good position. Celtic today defeated Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup semi-final, so they'll play in the final against Hearts. A lot of press here about Celtic. It's either Celtic and Rangers, and because things haven't been going for Celtic, obviously there's been a lot of media coverage of them and whether or not they're the team that can go on and win the title and 10 in a row and create history. But Rangers are going about their business very quietly. Steven Gerrard's doing a great job, but he's making sure that they remain humble. Every game counts. So that's where Rangers have fell over in previous seasons. I think they can win it this year, yes.
Interesting. We shall see if you are right. Before we leave the Scottish football scene, we should also pay our condolences to the former Hearts captain of their Scottish Cup winning team of a few years ago, Marius Zaliukas, who tragically passed away within the last few days. So our condolences to his family. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our final segments this week.
Footballers Live.
Our guest this week was born in Gosford in 1992, beginning his career with Manly United and then Sydney FC, for whom his solitary A-League appearance came in the 2010 Grand Final win over Melbourne Victory as a late sub. After a brief stint in Belgium with Olympique Charleroi, he worked his way back up into the A-League via Manly United again and Marconi Stallions, signing for the Western Sydney Wanderers in 2012. But he struggled to get a first-team spot at both Wanderers and then his next club, Newcastle Jets, dropping back into the state leagues with Blacktown City via a stop-off in Hong Kong. It seemed perhaps that his days in the top division ranks were over until he took a very different career direction. In February this year, he signed for Keflavik in the second tier in Iceland. Since then, he's banged in 21 goals in just 19 games to win the divisional Golden Boots, the championship and promotion. And he joins us now in what is the longest distance guest we've had on the podcast so far. It's a big welcome to Joey Gibbs. How are you, Joey?
Yeah, well, mate. Well, how are you?
Yeah, very good. So how does a kid from Gosford end up being in one of the most northerly outposts in the world?
Yeah, mate. It's something I definitely didn't expect. You know, it all happened very, very quick. I think I remember I was, it would have been mid-February, and I was getting ready to start my season with Blacktown, actually. And it was all just right before COVID was all hitting off as well. So, I think the timing was good because I just got over here in time before it got real serious, you know.
And as I understand it, you weren't the only Aussie in Iceland either. There's a guy called Jonathan Farber, who's a goalkeeper from the Central Coast. I'm not sure whether you knew each other, whether he's still there or if you hung out together.
I know of him. I think he was actually from Northern Beaches. I think so. Yeah. But I remember seeing a documentary on him, actually. He was at Keflavik as well.
That's right. The documentary was on Optus, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what's it like living over there? Because you left Australia post-bushfires. and then you head to this country that I'm sure you probably didn't know too much about. Just give us an example of perhaps some of the difficulties of being so far away from your family. Of course, in a COVID world, I'm sure are not allowed to come and visit you.
Yeah, no, it's, 2020 has been pretty full on, you know what I mean? In regards to how different the two countries are, obviously the weather, but it was just that the difference between Australia in February with the bushfires coming over here to Iceland in February is completely different, because I came on the weekend of a big blizzard as well, you know, so it was like, you know, not just a bit of snow, it was about... It was halfway up my door kind of snow, you know? So I didn't know how to open the door. And like, you, I don't know, you had to drive and it was just unbelievable. But, and I'd never seen snow before. So that was a new experience. But they all play in the football, like they have big football halls here in winter, so they can train and play all year round. So that was my first couple of weeks was like that. And then you start hitting summer and that's when the season comes. And then you got 20 hours of daylight in that time. So it's a little bit different.
A little bit different, Joey. But, mate, the challenges that you've had, obviously, to try and find a fit throughout your career, mate, fair play, because you've kept knocking. You've kept knocking on the door and had a fantastic season. How does the standard of the football in Iceland with the second division, obviously you've been promoted, how does that compare to Australia? I mean, conditions we know about, but... the standard of play.
Yeah, it's I've been asked this a few times, you know, it's kind of like it's a tough one. Because I'll say my division now I'm in, and you look at this, maybe the NPL New South Wales, I'd probably say there's not too many differences. I'd say the standard is similar. I feel like maybe I don't know, maybe it's just my squad as well, but I feel like my squad, the boys are a little bit more football literate. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I know they understand the game well, but they might not be as technically good as some of the Australian boys, or physically as good, you know what I mean? Because it's a country of 360,000. But, you know, they got four divisions of football. But, and then when you get to the top division's quite, again, there's some impressive teams in that, because we played a few of the bigger teams in the cup and pre-season. And, I was quite impressed. It felt like playing against an A-League team if you're an NPL team. You know, it felt like the standard of just the intensity was a bit higher, and they really like to play football there as well. You know, I think they got quite a good education system through the youth, and they for 360,000, you see their national team, they do quite well. It's impressive.
I was going to say that, Joey, because I played a UEFA Cup game against Reykjavik. And they're a very good side, and their game has come forward in leaps and bounds. So their top tier is a very serious league. And what you spoke about there is four divisions they have.
Yeah, they're not all professional, obviously, but there's a country of 360,000. There's like a good four divisions, I think, of teams who can all get promoted, relegated. You know what I mean? So
It's good to see that you haven't stopped banging in goals.
Yeah, no, it's I'm enjoying the team I'm with, you know. Like, yeah, we've got some good young Icelandic boys there who, you know, I've been getting good service. So I'm, enjoying it.
You've got to say that, eh?
Yeah, you never know. They might be you.
Joey, culturally, I would imagine it's a pretty easy fit. I've been to Iceland myself on holiday. I actually visited Keflavik. And culturally, I would imagine it's quite easy. Everybody speaks English. Apart from the weather, it must be okay. I know you've got a couple of English lads, I think, as well, who play in the team. Has that been quite a smooth transition in that regard?
Yeah, it's fine. I think, out of a lot of countries you could go to, I think Iceland's, everyone knows English. Even just that, culturally, like you said, like... it's kind of like a hardworking culture, I feel. And I feel like some of Australia's like that. But I feel like it's kind of, they do, if you come in as a player and you kind of put your head down and work hard, they respect that, you know, the coaches and the players. So I felt that that helps because I think this club, especially, have had had problems with signing foreigners that haven't really done that. So I think that's, I don't know, I think I got respect quickly for that. And I think that was a little bit of the Australian mentality, which helped because I think they appreciate that type of thing. So it got off to a good start. And yeah, it was pretty smooth transition, really.
Joey, I was going to touch on that in terms of the mentality you touch on, and in terms of, although it's a small nation in terms of numbers that play the game, that football culture, I mean, it's still a football culture that might be different to Australia, for example. You know, like, people in Australia don't really watch a lot of football and don't really have the education of the football. But when you go to countries as small as this, that mentality and that education is still there in the football, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's just, again, yeah, like, I love Australia, but that's the one thing I don't like about it, you know? It's just like, you go to the hotel here or the pub, and all it is football, you know what I mean? And then you look at the media, front page of the paper, and or online, wherever it is, it's all football. And, you just, I guess that just gradually, as you grow up as a kid, from what, you know, 6 years old to 18, you just, it's football, that's all it is. And then you watch more football, you have more idols, you look at certain players. I don't know, I think it affects affects things a lot.
Joey, you mentioned the domes that are all over Iceland. This is one thing that I noticed when I visited there. They're like huge spaceships in sort of every village as you drive around Iceland. That's been a key to their success, hasn't it, over the last few years? They've really invested not just in those indoor facilities, which, of course, they need during the winter when it gets pretty cold, but also in coaching as well. I think they've got more UEFA qualified coaches per capita than any other nation in Europe, which is staggering for a country of that small population.
I've heard that too, and I think I've been watching their national team a bit because it's on everywhere here, and like Iceland will play England, and I think it was I just thought they defended so well, really disciplined, and it was, you know, impressive against England, who should be beating them 5-0, you know what I mean? And then I think they're about to play Hungary for the Euro spot. I think that's the case. But again, they all the boys look, it's that they've been coached well, number one, and I think there's a good mentality in the country, kind of how that, you know, just the way they, it's the one thing I noticed is the way they defend, you know, as a group and all that. And but yeah, mentioning the domes, I think that came in maybe 20 years ago. I think our one in Keflavik was the first ever one built, actually. But we don't play competition games in them. It's only the friendlies when it's winter, and then it's mainly a summer competition. And then you're back in the domes come around this time now and pre-season.
So a lot of people would have said to you, you're mad for going to Iceland. What are you going to Iceland for? But, mate, in your head now, what do you think are the benefits of going to a place like Iceland to give you the opportunity to get into Europe, or to say, I was sick of Australian football and I wanted a different challenge?
I got that a little bit, actually. It wasn't really just said, you just got that vibe from people. But I kind of went over here at what, I was 27, 28, and then, you know, the career is a short one, so I was like, well, fuck, why not, you know? Why not? And then, I'm happy I made the move, but it wasn't a blind move, you know? I had a good chat to the coach, and I've heard some good things about him, and he actually, I knew a few people who knew him quite well, and I thought that, you know, I guess every coach tries to sell their club to you, but I just got that feeling, and the way he spoke, that it could work, you know what I mean? Yeah, things went well, now I guess our goal was to finish first, and now we're in the top division next year. So, yeah, no, I think you never know what can happen, but it just feels, again, like it's, you know, you can be in Iceland or, you know, nearly every other part of the world, you know, and you can be in the second division, and you're in the first division the next year if you do well, so you get rewarded. Just fuels you with a little bit of ambition. And even now, like, if we do well next year, we're could be in Europa League, you know what I mean, or Champions League playoffs, which is just something, you know, I was playing for Blacktown a year ago. But it's
that's great.
Yeah, it's funny how when you're even just in this area, things are things can happen. You know what I mean? Or it feels like that. So
yeah. Closer, mate. It's closer. Europe is closer. It's a bigger shop window, as you know. So in terms of your contract situation, Joey, what's your contract length? And obviously, moving forward, you touched on ambition.
I'm here for two more seasons. I'm enjoying it here, and I do feel the club. It is also implementing certain things to make sure it will move forward as well. You know, they're not just trying to sell the dream, but they are also kind of acting on it. You know, so yeah.
Mate, can I offer you a bit of advice?
Yeah.
Because as players, they tend to move a lot and chase that happiness, yeah? And that feeling of feeling as if you fit. And by all accounts, you've done that. So don't be in a rush to make any decisions, mate. Enjoy the moment and see where it takes you, and don't get too far ahead.
No, I was actually given that advice around something very similar around the negotiation time, because I only signed for a year and I renegotiated and signed again for two more years. So no, I totally agree with that one.
Joey, I know it's been fantastic for you over there in terms of scoring goals and winning promotion. I'm sure you're looking forward to playing in the top league next season, but it's not all been smooth sailing, has it? Because of COVID, I read that you had to work mowing the grass at a golf club just to keep going financially, because the football stopped, same as everywhere else.
Yeah, no, I was doing a bit of that. That wasn't too bad, because it gave you a bit of routine, you know. And it was a pretty nice golf course as well. It was probably one of the most beautiful spots you could ever be. It was, you know, the big Icelandic rock cliffs and all that. It was really nice. But I got over here. I came February, mid-February, and then we stopped for 9 weeks or 7-8 weeks because of the first wave in March, and then we stopped again mid-season around I think it was August, July maybe. July-ish, and then we had to finish the league early, two games short, which was a big and there was a bit of an uproar here about that, but we just, yeah, it's getting too cold. They can't play a lot of games indoors, and it's getting really bad. So it was weird. We won the title actually without playing our last two games, so or three games for us, two games for the others. But so it was a weird year.
Yeah. In terms of your partner, I know you've got a girlfriend, but she's not been able to join you yet. I don't know, your family probably not been able to go and visit you, as we mentioned earlier on. How do you deal with that separation mentally? Because you're pretty much on your own over there, aren't you? I know you say you've got your teammates and everything, but you're pretty self-sufficient, or you have to be.
Yeah, no, I think the first wave of COVID was a bit of a shock, but I don't know, mate, things are a bit easier with FaceTime and all that type of thing, but you do get sick of it, and you just you want to see people in person, obviously. But it's put a strain on a few things, but you know, you kind of end up living in the world you're in, and I think you just immerse yourself in that and you move on and live your life. So it's I'm enjoying it here. I really am.
Joey, have you been to any of the hot springs yet?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, they're unbelievable. There's just these hot pools that pop out of nowhere.
How cold is it when you get out?
Yeah. Keswick's real close to the Blue Lagoon, which is the big touristy one, you know, as well. So we're 20 minutes away from that.
Yeah, I've been there as well. Fantastic country. Joey, let's just talk a wee bit about the former part of your career. I mentioned that you made your A-League debut in that 2010 grand final. I think that was only because John Aloisi picked up the injury in that particular season. You were a kid in those days. That must have been an unbelievable experience. You're on the bench, perhaps unexpectedly, for a grand final, and then you get to play and you win the title in your first ever game in senior football.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing experience and a very rare one, you know. And I think I can look back on it now, and I knew at the time it was a crazy one as well. But even now, it's one of those ones that, you look back on and think, wow, you know, like that was came out of nowhere, you know. But I remember that very well, because I only even started I was injured for like 4 months before that with stress fractures, I think it was. And then, so I came into even the youth league quite late. And yeah, obviously, there was a lot of injuries in the first team. I think even Stevie Corrick was injured. Aloisi, I think there may have been a few more too in that front area. Mm. But yeah, and then I was training well at the time. I think I was just really happy to be back playing, you know, because I've been injured for so long. And then I ended up being on the bench and ended up coming on the 170th or so minute, I think it was. But yeah, great memories.
It didn't quite work out for you at Sydney, and you sort of dropped back into the state leagues. You re-emerged with Western Sydney Wanderers, but you said in the intro that you struggled to get a regular spot. Actually, your first season, I think you did okay. You played 13 times, but then Tony Popovich wanted Tommy Urich to come in, and you found it difficult to establish yourself with the Wanderers.
Yeah, no, I think it's competitive being a young Aussie striker, you know what I mean? Especially in the A-League. You look at what there's 10, 11, how many teams now? 12, is it? Oh, with MacArthur come in, or 11. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then you think usually there's maybe that a few of those spots are reserved for foreigners in each team as well. So when you look at it realistically, there's maybe, you know, for an Aussie striker, an Aussie nine, there's not too many opportunities really, you know. And then you've got our second division, which is technically the NPL, and it's a semi-professional environment. So it's quite tough when you kind of have that, you know, if the second step backwards or the step back is not professional, it does make it tough to try and chase the A-League again, because, you know, it's still doable. It's definitely doable, but it does make it a bit tougher. But yeah, I think I look back on those times and yeah, no, my time at the Wanderers was a great experience. I think I learned a lot. And I thought I did pretty well with my opportunity as well, being a young striker coming from the NPL. I think I probably exceeded expectations and I could have even been better in the second season, but wasn't to be. And but yeah, it's great memories nonetheless.
And you had a similar experience, I know, with the Newcastle Jets, because you, the likes of Emil Heskey was sort of blocking your way. It is a real problem, isn't it, for young Aussie strikers? And we bemoan the lack of Australian strikers, but they struggle to get opportunities because that's the area of the pitch that A-League clubs tend to go for the big name foreigner, and that really hurts the Aussie strikers in many ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I'm just trying to. It was funny times especially Newcastle, because I remember there was Emil Heskey was there, and obviously he's the marquee; he's always going to play. And rightly so. But and then actually Adam Taggart had a very good year that year as well. So that was one Aussie striker did very well that year. And but yeah, other than that, it is a little bit difficult. Then you look at the system the way it's set up as well, with the youth league is what you do when you're not playing in the A-League, obviously. So that the level of that isn't really enough to be competitive in the A-League or win back a spot, you know. I always felt that it was such a big step. If you were in the youth league for 4 or 5 weeks and you got to try and step up to the intensity of the A-League, it was always very, very tough.
How Joey, how is the foreigner situation there in Iceland then? Do all teams, is there a quota, and do all teams fill that quota? And what positions do they normally go for a foreigner?
Yeah, it's... I think they're allowed as many as they want here, because there's some clubs, right, which are in these cities of about 2,000 people, or probably a bit more than that, but very little people. So they've got about 10 foreigners playing for them. Over here, for example, we've got there's a Spanish lad who's a defender. We've got a English boy who's a number 10 winger type of thing, and then myself. But yeah, again, probably similar. There's like, if you look at, I guess I've been looking at the top goal scorers list a bit, and a lot of them, yeah, they're mainly all foreigners. You know what I mean? About 5 or 6 of the top goal scorers are the foreigners. So yeah, I think that's probably the majority of the position is in that front area. You know what I mean?
Joey,
Joey, mate, I've got to ask all our guests the same question, mate, and you're no different. So, mate, I've got to ask you, the best stadium you've ever played at and the biggest dungeon you've ever played at. And don't even think about saying Adenza Park, the Croatian Sports Centre, is the dungeon.
Best stadium I've ever played at. I'm trying to think. I've always got good memories of, I think I was at Wanderers and I started in the Sydney Derby. Aussie Stadium. What's it called now? That one. It's not because of the stadium, yes. But I just remember we won 2-0 that night. And and that was obviously one of the inaugural derby years. You know what I mean? That was a really good experience. I always look back on that. And considering I started and played a lot of the game as well. The biggest dungeon. Maybe, I remember, probably Lambert Park 5-10 years ago. That was a horrible ground.
That's not bad. When it was grass.
Yeah, Lambert Park bad. When it wasn't synthetic. That has to be one of them.
Okay. Joey, it's time for us to sort of wrap this up. We've just got time for one Twitter question, which is our question of the week. Congratulations to Chris Carulli, who wins a $100 voucher for Outback Steakhouse. And Chris asks, and I think you might have seen your photo here on Instagram, how do Icelandic title celebrations compare with your experiences in Australia? And for those who don't know, you're on Instagram with a big hat and a fat cigar. Obviously, yeah. Enjoying the moment.
That was a funny one, right? Because it was Friday night, and like I said, there was the big COVID situation here, so we haven't played for 4 weeks, and their FA decided to call off the league at Friday at 6 p.m. So then it was a mad rush. The captain sorted something out because the next day there was a rule coming in: no more than 10 people in a room. So we had to, he organized something just like anticipating we would get it. So I think we all had a few drinks, started playing basketball in the big clubhouse we were dressed up as basketballers, and then we had to be very secretive about the celebrations, you know. And even now, you got to be careful what you post up, because we're not meant to be in groups, you know what I mean?
It looked a good night. Hey, Joey, it's great to see you, and great to see you're doing so well in Iceland. Wish you all the very best in the top flight next season. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce what that league is called, but we're sure you'll do great things in it, and keep flying the flag for Australia over there. Thanks very much, mate.
Cheers.
Well done,
Joey. Well done, Joey. Keep going, buddy.
And that is us this week. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Until then, bye for now.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.